The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Monday, the 3rd of July, 2023. And we're back for another week with you here on the 9 till noon show. How was your weekend? I hope it was very well indeed. Had a beautiful day yesterday. Father Sean Doherty. Of course, Sean Doherty presented a show here on Highland Radio in the mornings, ever popular. Almost 30 years, did I mention that? Yesterday, he was ordained as a priest, Father Sean Doherty now, and that took place in St. Eugene's in Derry. And as I say, very lucky, feel very lucky to have been there. And it was just an amazing day and an amazing story for Father Sean, who will be a guest on this programme, all being well, tomorrow morning. So if you're interested in hearing all about Father Sean's journey, then make sure to tune in tomorrow. But that's tomorrow. We've a whole show to get through today with plenty coming up as well on this programme. Let's start with the newspapers, and we'll start with the Donegal News, which leads with Father Sean's special day. Former Highland Radio presenter Sean Doherty has been ordained a priest at a special ceremony held in St. Eugene's Cathedral in Derry. Hundreds of family members, parishioners and friends gathered for Father Sean's special day, which was celebrated by the Most Reverend Dr. Donald McKeown, Bishop of Derry. Yesterday's celebration came just 6 years after Father Sean's shock announcement to step away from his popular morning programme here on Highland Radio to dedicate his life to God. Having been based in Rome since he was ordained a deacon last year, it's expected that he'll be based in the Derry diocese now that he's ordained a priest. Father Sean is the first of three due to be ordained a priest in the Derry diocese this year. During the service, Bishop Donald McKeown said Father Sean is being ordained at a time when there is so much discussion about the future of the church in Ireland. And indeed, the bishop made some interesting comments about the church bending to suit, I don't want to misquote him either, but bending just to suit, modern ways of life, and that the church in doing so would be built on a sandy foundation and what have you, which I thought were quite interesting comments. But anyway, once again, congratulations to Father Sean, who will be on this show tomorrow for his first chat, I believe, as a ordained priest. The Derry News this morning: concerns have been raised surrounding the impact a Derry dump is having on local drinking water. Derry City and Strabane District Council will request Northern Ireland Water answer questions about the Mowbray dump impact on drinking water following recent revelations. The issue was raised at the monthly meeting of the council. Last month, it was revealed that specialists brought in by Stormont now estimate that there is 1.6 million tonnes of waste at the dump, 40% more than the previous upper estimate. And I was chatting to lots of people yesterday, and many of them Derry-based, Tyrone-based, who've pointed out since the sad closure of BBC Radio Foyle, or partial closure, I'm not really quite sure how you might phrase that, that they've tuned into us, which is great, and welcome aboard. Thank you. I've never formally welcomed those of you who switched to this show aboard. And we're here for you as well, too, by the way. So if you have any issues or topics that you wish to raise that are particular to your area, please feel free to WhatsApp us and text us and call us. We're here for you too. From the north, the number to WhatsApp or text is 00353 86 60 25,000, or if you want to give us a buzz, it's 00353 74 91 25,000. But your calls, comments and texts are greatly appreciated. And as I say, I didn't really think, as I probably should, but I don't want to be dishonest, I never really thought about it quite until I was chatting to people yesterday, and it was lovely to talk to so many people as well. On to the Irish Independent now, and it's one of those stories that's beyond comprehension if you were to allow yourself for a moment to put yourself in the position. Two Irish Leaving Cert students on a post-exams holiday in Greece with friends have died in what their school described as a devastating loss. Andrew O'Donnell and Matt Wall, former students of St. Michael's College in Dublin, died on the Greek island of Loss at the weekend. Their former school yesterday confirmed the two deaths, saying it was a day of immense sadness. The two students are understood to have travelled to Loss with friends late last week. Mr. O'Donnell, just 18, is understood to have gone missing on Friday. His body was later found by a cliff just hours after his death was confirmed yesterday. The tragedy was compounded when news emerged of the death of his classmate, Mr. Wall. St. Michael's College paid tribute to its two former students and said its thoughts were with the young men's friends who have experienced such shocking loss over the last 24 hours. And obviously what their friends have been through, what their families are going through and will continue to go through, as I say, it's just very hard to even allow yourself to imagine what that must be like, thinking on everyone involved there. The Irish Times this morning, the RTE story, even though I didn't reference it early on, is on the front of it inside all the papers again today. And the Irish Times tells us that Ryan Tubridy is facing the prospect of being questioned in the Oireachtas about the dealings with RTE after a Dáil committee chairman said the broadcaster would be compelled to appear in Leinster House if he declines to attend voluntarily. As another critical week for RTE looms, the government is preparing to give powers to an external reviewer to examine years of national broadcasters' financial records. The intervention to be agreed on at today's cabinet meeting comes after the Dáil's Public Accounts Committee heard claims that RTE had a slush fund for expensive sports and entertainment junkets. That money came from the same UK barter account it used to funnel special payments to Mr. Tubridy. Its highest earner for years and higher, and it turned out, of course, as we know now, much higher than we even thought. The controversy began almost a fortnight ago when it was announced that more than €345,000 in hidden payments had been made to Mr. Tubridy. The former Late Late Show host has since widened, and concerns has intensified over lax financial controls in RTE and governance failing in its executive and board. And of course, now the focus is on other presenters and their deals with car manufacturers or car suppliers, and those ads being recorded on RTE property without permission, and it just rumbles on and on and on and on. Crisis-ridden RTE, this is the Irish Daily Mail. Crisis-ridden RTE is facing the prospect of having to ask a hostile government for a bailout to pay future tax and PRSI liabilities. The broadcaster's woes are set to be exacerbated by the prospect or expected conclusion of a scope investigation by the Department of Social Protection into claims hundreds of employees were improperly categorised as freelance workers instead of as staff. This is your bogus freelance workers. They've already paid out $1.2 million, but that could grow. Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys sought a briefing on the progress of the Root and Branch investigation last week, a probe that has been going on since 2020. One source said of the inquiry, it is in depth. Each worker is being interviewed on a case-by-case basis, and if RTE are found to have wrongly classified workers, they will have to rectify the situation. And RTE themselves say they've put millions of your money, taxpayers' money, to one side to cover that eventuality, but they might need a bailout from government beyond that. Lidl and Aldi have reduced the cost of their own brand milk by 10 cent, marking the second such cut this year. Super Value confirmed it would implement a similar cut today. So anytime we see the staples going down, it has to be good news, doesn't it? It comes after Tesco announced price cuts across more than 500 household essentials in the UK during a week where retailers were questioned before a Westminster committee about what they had done to help customers. Noel O'Connor, Group Managing Director of Aldi Ireland, said it reviews the market on a daily basis to ensure it will never be beaten on price. But I do wonder sometimes who is going to actually cover the cost of that reduction. Is it going to be amongst suppliers who are already, of course, under pressure? Shocking statistic in the Irish Daily Mirror. Almost 1,300 children have been put in hospital as a result of dog attacks over the past 10 years. Details released to the Irish Mirror show 3,149 people had inpatient care with bite injuries between 2013 and 2022. So in total, do you find this a shocking figure? 3,149 people hospitalised with dog bites over the last 9-10 years, 1,300 of them children. The Freedom of Information figures reveal 1,300 children, as I mentioned, were under 17. One of the 144 children badly injured was young schoolboy Alexandro Mizan, who was seriously attacked by a pit bull in Enniscorthy, County Wexford last November. The dog ripped off his bottom lip, mauled each of his cheeks, as well as injuring the boy's body and legs. The dog was destroyed that evening. But that's a lot of injuries as a result of dog bites. And finally, in the sun, for those of you who are on Twitter, you might have noticed that it's just not performing at times like it might have. Twitter users blasted Elon Musk after he limited them to seeing 1,000 tweets a day. Hashtag Twitter down and hashtag RIP Twitter trended after the owner announced the move. Tycoon Musk, however, called Saturday's decision a good deed. It means unverified users can see only 1,000 posts a day and new unverified users 500. Verified accounts who pay a monthly €12 get a 10,000 limit. Former Twitter employee Esther Crawford said, hubris plus no pushback, customer apathy, data equals a great way to light billions on fire. I have no clue what that means. But anyway, it's an interesting move from the king of free speech because it limits the reach of it. The logic behind it is, for anyone's interested, is that there are AI tools, artificial intelligence tools that scrape data. It's called scraping data from websites like Twitter, particularly Twitter, because every interaction a user has with Twitter is an interaction, whereas on Facebook or YouTube, it's not really quite the same. And you have these, this is the claim anyway, you have these organizations that can, they can scrape millions upon millions upon millions of tweets at the same time. The AI then processes what's being talked about. And sometimes if it's something they don't want talked about, they can use that information then to try and censor that type of speech. So that's the argument. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Some say he's just not paying his Google bills. Greg, why we can't do away with cash for the reasons. This is coming up time and time again, but we heard that the EU is looking to introduce a digital currency and we're being assured it's no threat to cash, but others might feel differently. Greg, we can't do away with cash for the reason. What if you were in a supermarket buying your messages and the power went off? If you did not have cash, how would you pay? You would not get your messages. What do you do when you have to keep cash going? As simple as that. Well, that's quite true. And I've seen an experience where I was in a very busy restaurant and bar, and the power did go out, and it seemed no one had cash. Everyone was using card, and everything kind of ground to a halt because no one could pay for their food or drink. We're joined on the program now by Councillor Paul Canning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you, Greg?
Good. Great to chat to you again, Paul. Shall we talk about the residential zoned land tax just right a bit from the beginning? Because I think it's one of those issues, even now, though we've discussed it a few times. It's been in the papers and elsewhere, but people might not be fully clear precisely what it is. So can we run through that to begin with, if that's okay?
Yeah, that's okay. The residential zoned land tax is a tax that has been applied to land that have been zoned that are available for building, basically. In Donegal, in relation to Donegal, the towns that are the only towns that are zoned are the main towns, which is Letterkenny and Buncrana, and then we have what they call the seven strategic towns, which consists of Donlow, Balbuffet, Ballyshannon, Regen, Cairndonagh, Donegal Town, and Killybegs. So in relation to them, those lands would have been zoned at a time by Donegal County Council for the betterment of those villages. Anything outside of them they don't have to worry about the residential zoned land tax. So the likes of Newton Cunningham, Manor Cunningham, Killeagh, all of them, they don't have any land that is actually zoned. They're in what they call a settlement framework. So they don't have to worry about it. It's just those nine towns that have to worry about the tax. Now, the tax is going to be to the tune of about 3% on the value that a property agent gives. So it will be based on that property. Now, as you well know, in relation to values, there will be independent value if you value the property too low for the purpose of the revenue. The situation with it is this came in last year, or the start of last year, and it was a process. The Donegal County Council had to do a mapping procedure, and that mapping procedure had to put in everything that they had zoned on the previous maps, and that then was being prepared and sent to Revenue. Revenue will be sending out letters in the post, no doubt, January, February of 2024, asking people for 3%. of the value of the property or ask them to get the property valued. That's where we're at.
I think even as we have this conversation, there will be people receive those letters in January and February and go, what's this all about? We've heard a lot of concern too from people who have farms in these areas. What is the situation now? Is it a fait accompli, or is there still an option to have your property dezoned if you intend to farm long into the future?
In relation to Buncrana and Letterkenny, I would say that ship has sailed. In relation to the seven strategic towns, which we mentioned was Dunloe, Balbuffet, Ballyshannon, Regen, Cairn, Donegal Town and Kellybeg, I would say there's still an opportunity there. We had a situation within Donegal County Council where the council were requesting that we put an extension of duration on the plan. We refused. We said we need to look at these towns because there is landowners in those towns that want their land to be dezoned. So there could be farmers in there that wants to dezone the land. Now, the situation with that is to do that, you have to, what they call, you have to vary the plan. And that takes time and it takes manpower and takes a lot of, so Donegal County Council they're going to hold a workshop with us within the next month to discuss what our options are.
So are you comfortable with all of this, though? Because it really does feel like a land grab. I mean, even if we were building loads and loads of houses to meet the need that's out there, we could maybe be having this conversation, but we don't. We're seeing housing targets being missed. We're seeing people opting now is not the time. And now what it feels like is that, you know, it feels like a little bit of a state land grab here of private property. How do you frame this in your mind?
Yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable with it in the smaller towns. Now, no disrespect to the seven strategic towns, but I feel that they should be given a little bit of latitude in relation to their rural setting. The larger cities and the larger towns, I think if you're going to move forward with those towns, you have to have some incentive for people rather than them to be hoarding land in the middle of a large town. And the locals want to develop, but all of a sudden the landowner won't sell. So there is a balance there, and I think it's down to the population of those towns and those cities. But it's unfortunate that some of the smaller towns have been caught in the same net. That's my honest opinion of it. I think the revenue will be very difficult to deal with, no doubt, and they'll be just coming with a large, the man says, a large hammer to crack a small nut.
And just in terms of the people with agricultural land around Letterkenny and Buncrana, as an example, and they only intend to use it as agricultural land, and therefore it has a certain value. Will it be valued as development land, which of course then would increase its value and increase the tax liability on it?
Yeah, it all depends on the location within the town within the town of Letterkenny. If you are in a prime site in the middle of the town, it will be valued depend on its future potential. Now the situation with all of those towns, there are so many different zoning within those towns. You have what they call residential, which is primary residential, which is land that houses will be built on. You have then the strategic reserve residential, which is land that will be eventually built on, but it will not be in the lifetime of this plan. So that has actually been challenged at the minute at a higher level. I think that's wrong as well. But you've also mixed use and you have opportunity sites that if the principal and them was for residential, that can still be taxed as well. Mm. So there's a lot of to and fro, a lot of reports and a lot of arguing to be done before you actually pay anything.
But what annoys me is that where we have the, I mean, there's a housing crisis all across this country, but where there is particular pressure, and I'm thinking areas like Cork and Dublin, we already have major developers with major banks of land getting exemptions. You know, it just talks to what's going on in this country that it seems in every facet that you look. You know, whereby you're going to get farmers who for the first time are going to be getting, or anyone are going to be getting, you know, these bills for tax. Yet at the same time, those in the know were able to get exemptions in areas like Cork, Galway and Dublin, where there is the majority of homelessness. Again, it just talks to what's going on. It doesn't look right. It feels bad and kind of typical of the way this country is run at the moment. Have you any concerns in that regard?
Yeah, well, the concerns, a lot of concerns, you know, the problem I have with a lot of the house, and you've mentioned about the houses and we're not meeting targets, etc. The biggest issue I have with there, and I'll just touch on it now when I'm at, is if you look at Bord Pleanála and the courts at the minute, there is over, this is, I don't know if you've heard this figure, but there is over 70,000 living units, houses, apartments, whatever, sitting with the board, being objected to by people kinda, that have their concerns. But that is houses and buildings that have been through the development plan, went through the planning process, and has been granted. And now you have a situation where you have they're objected to, basically. And even in the our local towns, We have developers and planners that have actually granted planning permission for houses that would see maybe 200 or 300 houses built in Letterkenny, houses built in Buncrana, even student accommodation built in Letterkenny, but people are objecting. It's going to the board. It's sitting in the board then for maybe a year to 2 years because of the mess that's there. Mm. So all of this is adding fuel to a fire that we're struggling to put out. You know, and we're trying, and the departments are trying to see if there's other avenues, and it's just where we're at the moment.
Just a question in here. I asked you about the possibility for people to, you know, get an exemption from this, and you said something along the lines that unfortunately it seems the ship has sailed. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean in real terms?
It means in relation to the Letterkenny, in relation to the Letterkenny town plan, we have there has been changes made to the town plan that are already in motion in relation to adopting the town plan. So Letterkenny, the council, the members of the Letterkenny town area have already done a lot of work in relation to the town plan, and they have made those changes. But if somebody, the landowner has probably been to, has spoken to members of the Letterkenny councillors, so they probably have their changes already in place. And the same has happened in Buncrana, where the Inishowen councillors have met with the planners and says, we want to dezone this, dezone that, and dezone that. So all of those things have taken place in the last 2 months or so. So there's a possibility that a lot of that land has been dezoned, but that has already passed. The time for that has passed.
And when councillors were dezoning this land, were they doing it of their own accord, or was it off the back of representations made to them?
No, it was back. It was back of the representation made to them, and also it was on the back of agents or architects also putting in. There was an opportunity for submissions. But what happens then, Greg, is whenever those submissions are made, that then goes into the council and they make their recommendation. But it also goes to the Office of the Planning Regulator, and it then goes to the minister, depending on who says what. So a lot of hoops has to go through before you actually get to your final draft, to your final plan.
Oh, it sounds incredibly messy.
And that's where we're at. That's where we're at with the seven strategic towns. We would be supposed to be reviewing them a year before they're up. that came in front of us a couple of months back. But the fact that we had all this RZLT to deal with, we couldn't say, no, we can't keep this can down the road for another year, because there is concerned landowners there that don't want to pay this residential zone land tax. So we want to give them an opportunity to dezone that. So that's why we're having a workshop now in the within the next month to see what options are and how we can change. Now, I just, you know, it's not all going to be plain sailing, because if there is landowners or farmers that have a field in the middle of one of those villages, it's going to be very difficult for them to get that dezoned, because the Office of the Planning Regulator have said, well, that is of strategic importance to the likes of Carndona, to the likes of Bridgend or whatever. So we will not be allowing that to happen, because if we're going to move forward with this town, this is what has to happen. So that then, that's the sort of, that's the issues and the challenges that we are going to have going forward in relation to this.
I mean, taxing people on their own property is with a view to them forcing them to sell it, or forcing them to make it available for development, even if there's no intention of that. I mean, it just seems a wee bit of an overreach. I mean, I asked you again, I mean, but generally, have the councillors done enough to, I mean, you are all complying and working with this system, it seems, not all, sorry, but at least enough. I mean, have you been asleep at the wheel here? Do you think you've done enough to represent what the views of those you elected might be?
Yeah, we're still in the process. We're still in the process, Greg. And speaking on behalf of all of the councillors, they are getting representations, and they're taking those representations forward. But as you well know better than me, it's the process can be very mind-boggling, and it can also be very time. It's one of them. Yeah. It's one of them things that you're caught in a right. It's a wee bit like whenever it came in front of us in the December, and you had till January. You know, that these things appear, you know, which is wrong by the departments in relation to the time that they give us to like do this.
Just, and if you don't do, again, Paul, this is just a general commentary, if you don't mind, finally, just on how things work. I mean, this is incredibly complex, involving so many different people, workshops, meetings, deadlines, and yet it's been fast-tracked through such a complex thing, and money will be able to be taken off general society, and they'll start getting letters from revenue next year, and you know they'll hit that timeline. And then we have other things, you know, like, for instance, it's an obvious one, but you'll excuse me for saying it, things like the defective concrete blocks remedial updated scheme, or whatever anyone wants to call it, and it's bogged down, and it's slow, and it's messy, and it's convoluted. You know, it's funny how the wheels can turn so much more quicker when it's about taking money from society than they turn when it's about helping people who are under pressure and in dire situations. I mean, do you get a sense of what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I definitely do. In relation to the paperwork, et cetera, you know, a number of the counselors sort of said, like, what's going on here? You're handed maybe three or four books and maybe 100 pages in each book, and you have to make a decision on something. And you're handed these books on the Thursday, and you have to make a decision by the following Monday on item that's somewhere in that book. It's unfair, and it's just how the system works with us all, you know. And we're getting that with everything, you know. Even like you have the planning, and you have a waste management plan that was put in front of us last week there, and because of the whole MICA situation, the generation will be generating a lot of waste, will not meet our targets, so we can't adopt a plan that's setting targets for us. These things are coming in front of us every week, Greg, and there's far too much bureaucracy and red tape, I think, involved in the whole civil servant department, yeah, council rule.
Were you told what the council intends to do with the waste generated by demolitions? Has that been decided yet?
What's what we're looking at is we're looking at our own facilities in relation to waste. I don't want to get, because it gets too anybody dealing with waste, you need what they call a facility permit, which is the facility, and also an activity permit, which is actually the transportation of it. So anybody that is looking at areas that they think that they could have a facility there for the taking of waste, they need to apply for a permit. Mm. That permit then will go through the rigors of the law, as insofar as habitats protection, water course.
Is it likely to be buried from your experience? Is it likely we're going to see people applying for licenses and permits to bury these blocks and the concrete?
Yeah, well, there will be, yes. And it will become a commercial entity, because it'll not be everybody will get a permit because of the location of where they'll be looking to actually take the waste. And that same person will be applying for an activity license, because they will need to be able to transport it, and they need to be able to transport it in a manner that is in compliance with the waste management plan. So okay. It will become a commercial entity for a couple of people, you know, but the facility that they will be bringing the waste to will have to be meeting all of the regulations insofar as the protection of the area that they're bringing it to.
Right, okay, interesting stuff. Sorry, touched on a couple of things there, but in a way they're all interconnected. Councillor Paul Canning, thanks for your time this morning. 086 60 25,000. And again, I don't want to come across as anti-establishment, because it's not like that, but I mean, this residential zoned land tax, it's just banging through, it's flying through, and revenue could start sending out bills, and you know you can't avoid the bills from revenue. Really, really quickly, could it be a case that such a complex nationwide system could be in place before any even partially workable defective concrete scheme? Do you know what I mean? It's just crazy how things can move at different paces. A caller says it was Mary T. Sweeney who alerted us to the RZLT tax, and she's not a county councillor. The elected members had already voted for it without studying the implications and repercussions for many landowners concerned. What is Councillor Canning saying about the RZLT in Letterkenny and Buncrana and for landowners in Donegal? I think we covered most of that through the course of the interview. Houses being granted planning in the wrong place is illegal, hence objections. This is a land grab. Okay, they were kind of two separate issues, but I understand what you're saying. Here's an interesting one. Hi, Greg. Good morning. I have a friend from down the country who wanted to come up for the rally next year, 2024, and priced hotels. I know it's rally weekend, but this is a joke. Thanks. Right now, I don't know if this is just one hotel here. But for 3 nights over the course of the rally, it's a price for 3 nights for 2 adults in one hotel was $2,697. Now, that included taxes and fees, if you don't mind. And the price was knocked down from $2,997. Again, there's I must dig into this a little bit more rather than randomly mentioning this, but that definitely looks to me like a default $999 per night booking fee, which seems to pop up when you go through booking.com and some other outlets when it's really, really busy. There seems to be some sort of a default $999. But if you wanted to book 3 nights in this hotel next year, it would be €999 per night plus a little bit of a discount because you're staying for 3 nights. Hi, Greg. My daughter went to the ATM in a local shop, took out €80, but there was a problem and the money didn't come out. That was 3 months ago now and they're still looking into it. This is a disgrace in my opinion. Any help, please? Okay, was it an ATM in a shop? Which type of ATM, because there are different ATMs, of course, they're different commercial practices. That door's very squeaky, isn't it? Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Greg, major problem at the moment is underage drinking. Local supermarket shops selling alcohol and vapes to underage without a thought or care. A person recently witnessed a boy aged around 13 buying vodka at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. It was in a big local chain store. They weren't questioned. Absolutely unacceptable. Needs to be a clampdown. And parental attitude is too accepting of kids drinking. I think I read that one last week, actually. We learned towards the end of last week, and these figures are always published on a Friday evening, it seems, but there's been a rise in the number of people classified as homeless across the Northwest. Figures published show 20 families with 48 dependent children were in emergency accommodation across the region during the last week in May. That's six families more than at the end of April, with 10 extra children. There were 122 adults in emergency accommodation in the Northwest at the end of last month, 13 more than the previous month. Of those, 562 were in emergency accommodation in Donegal. Noel Daly is CEO of the Northwest Simon Community and is with us now. Noel, thanks very much for joining us today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
And this makes for very difficult reading, because I think the numbers the last time they were released were somewhat steady, even at a relatively high level, you could say. But this shows, and I wonder why, a significant increase in homelessness in our part of the world here.
Yes, I mean, you gave all the statistics there, Greg. I suppose the only in terms of figures to emphasise the extent of the problem that I can add to that is this is the highest number of individuals ever recorded to be homeless in the Northwest. And it's also the highest number of children in homelessness also to be recorded.
When we talk about homelessness, what are the categories there? Because there are people that maybe aren't caught in these figures, but perhaps should.
Yes, well, the figures relate to people who are approved for emergency accommodation by the local authorities. People who aren't included in that would be anyone that would be staying with family or friends. The last social housing assessment carried out in November 22 identified just under 800 households in that situation. Then there are people who may be sleeping in vans and cars and caravans around the region or sleeping rough. They are not included. And also not included as any family in a domestic violence refuge.
Yes, and also, of course, there's another group of people who are in unsafe houses who shouldn't be in them but can't move out because there's no other accommodation available. Now, I'm not sure if you would class them as homeless, but it's another group of people who can't get accommodation and are living in conditions that perhaps they shouldn't. What do you think has led to this this peak now? Is it the change, do you think, in government policy as it relates to no-fault evictions?
It's a hard one to answer in that sense, because it's proving cause and effect is always very difficult, but undoubtedly we've had this significant rise in households. The local authorities across the region have done all they can over the last couple of months to avoid people who had no-fault evictions coming online, that they would get transferred to housing, but there's a limit to what they have available and there's a limit of resources to the local authority. And again, to go back to the point about being eligible for social housing, people may be homeless for reasons other than an acute need for housing. Sometimes the problems may be related to family circumstances outside of housing. Not everybody is eligible for emergency accommodation to come. We work with people and many of them don't meet the criteria that the local authority have to use to allocate accommodation. And if they don't, they don't qualify under that criteria, they don't meet it at all. Homelessness is about much more than housing. No, and I think one of the challenges that we have is that the housing authorities are being asked to deal with situations that they're not equipped to deal with. People who are in crisis with mental health, people who are in family crisis, for example. It may not fit into the criteria that meets the local authority has to fulfil.
So what do we do about that, Noel? I mean, obviously then we have to change how we are dealing with people, because otherwise these people are just going to, you know, not get the help that they need.
Yes. And in fairness, the broad principles of what we need to do are well established, and they're contained within the government's national strategy for housing for all, and they're contained again in the local action plan, which we completed in January at the regional forum. It's gone through the councils now, and there are actions to involve to increase the level of coordination, to bring in, for example, Tuasal more into the situation, as the child and family agency, they, you would expect perhaps that every child that goes into homeless services is a subject of review with TUSLA, but they simply don't see themselves having a function in that area. If the family unit is deemed secure, then the child is not deemed to be at risk. And TUSLA, again, don't have the resources. You know, we're stretched and everywhere.
Yeah. How you say that we need new measures to halt people's progression into homelessness and that they're urgently needed. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit more about that. What are we talking about?
Well, I think everybody agrees that the solution to homelessness is a house. And I think perhaps most people think that means a new house, but it doesn't have to. A lot of the time it can be about helping the family keep the house that they have, or the individual to keep the house they have. If somebody is going through trauma in their lives, it invariably means that they're chaotic and they don't manage all aspects of their life very well. And so one of the things that very often gets dropped very quickly is rent payments, etc. You know, and landlords work very hard and are very sympathetic in the main to people having difficulties, and they try to accommodate tenants. But they need support. They need assistance from the state. We have this anomaly, for example, that anybody who's on the homeless assistance payment, they make an individual contribution to the rent, and that goes to the HAP office in Sligo, in Limerick. And then they may also be topping up the rent with the landlord over and above the money that's paid through the HAP system. But if the tenants drops their contribution to HAP, which may seem the least important payment, HAP doesn't tell the landlords that their payment isn't being maintained. And suddenly the landlord gets a notification that the tenant hasn't paid the contribution for 3 months.
So it escalates. It's cliff edge escalation, isn't it?
And the landlord has had no notice at all, and they've continued believing they're providing accommodation, believing they've fulfilled all the requirements of the system. And then HAP says, sorry, we have to end the tenancy. And they don't communicate with anyone.
Yeah, it's very hard for me anyway, and I'm starting to sound like a scratched record, though, but every issue we talk about seems to end up back to the same point. You know, we have organisations like yours in situ. We have action plans. We have solutions. We have the problems identified. And yet we seem to be making no inroads in that regard. This at the same time as we talk about full employment, as we talk about an ultra-rich economy, as we talk about writing down national debt, putting money away from the future, rainy day funds. I'm just struggling to sit in a seat like this and do a current affairs programme when you talked about an anomaly earlier on, and it's glaring here that we are a well-resourced country, but we are refusing, it seems, to allocate funds to fix a problem that we generally have a lot of the solutions for. Of course, building new houses, yes, that's fantastic. Yeah. Action plan in that regard. But in terms of the basics, in terms of helping people, in terms of stopping the progression into homelessness, for an example, I mean, you've outlined precisely how we could do that. But there seems a resistance to do that. And then when you hear economics talking about how to suppress inflation, we can't be investing too much in new houses, we can't be helping too many people, that we do need people skint. We need money out of the economy. And that is, you know, which means they're talking about more taxes, even though people are hard pressed. Like, it's I don't know if it was ever as clear as it is now, that it's almost policy to have people in these situations to suppress inflation and then eventually perhaps lead to interest rates going down.
Yes, I think it's probably more that there's a disconnection between policy and reality. We spend more time managing the expenditure and making sure that it's counted than making sure that it's used well.
But is that disconnect, Noel, intentional or accidental? Because I can't believe that anyone could be so insulated to not know what's going around this country, especially if you're in a position of power to try and address it. So when you talk of a disconnect, is it a purposeful disconnect or is it ignorance?
My inclination is that it's purposeful, because
it's,
I mean,
it's worrying, isn't it?
There are many people in this country who are doing quite well, and they're the people who vote. I mean, the reality is there isn't much votes in homelessness, and so if you're looking for your target audience for the next election, the people who are going to vote for you, if you're promising a well-run economy with no wastage in expenditure, the people who are voting for you are probably unlikely to be in homeless services.
They might be more inclined to want to keep the status quo.
Yes. I mean, you know, we all know that in the last election in 2020, the public voted for change. What we don't know is what change they wanted and how many changes they wanted. But at the end of the day, I mean, you have, if you go back to the central problem, I mean, homeless services are managed by the Housing Authority for a very good reason, because it's primarily a housing problem. But the housing authorities aren't being equipped to respond to homelessness as a national emergency. It's being dealt with as a housing issue. If you take the 170 people that are homeless last month, that equates to just under 10% of the people who are on the social housing needs list in the Northwest.
And I presume you don't see taking over a hotel in Bundoran or something and housing these people in hotel rooms, because those texts are likely to come in. You don't see that as a solution to this crisis, I take it?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's a hotel with space in Bundoran. I think it needs to be more complex than that, because you can't just lump everybody into the one facility. There is a need for increased emergency accommodation and increased support to get people out of homelessness. At the moment, the local authorities have one staff member employed by Northwest Simon in Donegal working with settlement and tenancy sustainment. And Maria has about 20 cases that she's working with at the moment. And the other has anyone else that goes into the service that needs support to get out of it. There isn't any staff directly working with them. Say, for instance, DePaul provide emergency service, and they work with the people who come to them. But the majority of people, if they're provided with emergency accommodation, they won't immediately get support to help them to solve whatever issues that brought them into the service, and to get them out of it. If you can get into contact with an individual early on, identify the problems before they become into emergency service, that's preferable in my mind.
Thanks so much for your time this morning. I just, the problem is that unless something changes, we'll be going over this conversation again when the next set of figures are released.
Yes.
And if we're lucky, maybe they'll stay similar, but it's most likely they'll continue to increase, because you're identifying what needs to be done, and we know there's nothing really in place to sort of do that. And it's a horrible situation you find yourself in as someone who's very much interested in eliminating homelessness. But Noel, unfortunately, that's the frustrating world we currently live in. Maybe we might be surprised. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Okay, that's Noel Daly, CEO of the Northwest Simon community. If you would wish to have a say on that issue, please get in touch with us. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25 000. And just to remind you that you can watch this show daily, if you're tuning in for the first time, on our YouTube channel. Search Highland Radio Ireland, and you can watch us on your phone, tablet, laptop, big screen, your TV. Most TVs now are smart TVs. The YouTube app should be on it, or on your Fire Stick. For whatever reason, you might have one of those. YouTube is also on that device, so you can watch us there as well. And on our Facebook channel, unfortunately, Facebook Watch was discontinued, so it's not as good as YouTube anymore. But anyway, we're on Facebook, Highland Radio Ireland, Highland Radio News and Sport. And there's a Watch Live tab on our website where you can watch there as well in browser. All right, so no excuses. Later on, we're going to be talking sport with Brendan Devaney, reflecting on the weekend's sporting action, looking forward to what's ahead. That and so much more besides on the way. But let's take a break now for the news at 10 and the obituary notices.